Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Esprit Radio.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
That's right. Welcome to our neighborhood. Welcome to Black on Black Crime, our point counterpoint program where we talk issues, news. Sometimes we play a game or two, but we don't do crime. If you're not familiar with our program, Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. You can join in on today's topic by calling in or sending your comments in the chat room. With that being said, on with the show.
All right, I would like to welcome you again to Black on Black Crime. Your host, Jerome. On today's show, we have actress Rosie Perez versus Jennifer Lopez. That's our main topic today. Now, before I go any further, I just want to remind you that Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. And if it's your first time tuning in, welcome to the show. And if you missed some past shows and want to check us out in the archives, you can always go to bobc@solarsyracuse.com. Or you can, there's a couple of places you can go, by the way. And another one is you can go to solarsyracuse.com/BOBC show. How about that? See, that makes it easier. And you can also download us on iTunes if you want to keep up right in the moment. And so that's what we do here. Now, on our last show, Kevin Durant versus three times NBA champ Dwayne Wade, film critic Armand White versus Steve McQueen, you know, from 12 Years a Slave. We had a discussion with Kevin Hart saying something about SNL hiring black women is not about race. That was all on the last show. You can check it out in the archives. Just go to bobcshow.soulofsyracuse.com, and you can check out all those shows and more in the archives. Now, on this show, actress Rosie Perez versus Jennifer Lopez, that's J-Lo, the two actresses, fly girls, are having a little moment as Rosie Perez is coming out with a book, so that will probably start that back up. And we have, you know, it's Black History Month, so someone had to make a cross the line on Black History, and that would be Nicki Minaj this time versus Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz. That's right. She kind of did something Malcolm X-wise and had to send out a retraction, but I still want to ask if that is a black-on-black crime. Former NFL players and both Super Bowl players as well, Warren Sapp versus Michael Strahan. They made some comments. We're going to talk about their slight little feud. We have Uncle Ruckus Watts. Sam Jackson asked the question or talked about race in the movies, which I think should be interesting. We have that. Much more entertainment updates and more. So I just want to welcome you again onto the show. And if you have any comments about the show, you can send them to bobc@soulofsyracuse.com. Don't forget to join our Facebook page @BOBC show. I think I got all of the commercials out of the way on that one little breath. So, again, if you want to call in and join us, you can call 909-265-9189 to join the program. And just remember to keep your comments relevant. No vulgarity, obscenity, and all that stuff. I'll put you on mute. So we like to start the show before we get into our Black on Black Crime segment. We like to start our show with some entertainment news. Now, this weekend with the box office, at the box office, About Last Night, the remake About Last Night, opened the weekend with $27 million box office take and put them in the number two slot. So another movie that's with Kevin Hart and I can't remember his name. Can't believe I just lost his name that quick. But, you know, it's it is number two in the box office this week. And we also, you know, producer Will Packer and Tim Story, they had the back-to-back hits of Think Like a Man in 2012 and Ride Along, which is still at the box office, that grossed an unexpected, you know, well, Think Like a Man was an unexpected $91.5 million at the box office, but Ride Along, which is still at the box office, is over $106 million domestically already. Now, they have an upcoming release, Think Like a Man 2, which is the sequel of Think Like a Man, which was inspired by Steve Harvey's best-selling book, Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man. Now, Think Like a Man 2 is scheduled for release June 20th, 2014, but they are now releasing some of their trailers, so if you want to check those out, they're on YouTube, and I'm sure they'll hit some ads when they get later in May for their release. Now, Packer, he shared some words. He just said that we're excited to follow these beloved characters into their next chapter. The first movie was about our couples coming together. This one is a fun romp which explores whether these relationships can survive the backdrop of Vegas. So Think Like a Man 2 is a road trip movie pretty much, where they're going to go to Vegas and pretty much, I guess, follow the evolution of their relationships. All right, that's Think Like a Man 2. Now, legendary African-American publication Ebony Magazine has found itself in some hot water following its scandal issue. Now, the magazine is being sued by Leon Isaac Kennedy, the former husband of the bombshell, 70s bombshell, Jane Kennedy. Now, Kennedy is suing the magazine because of their scandal issue. They made mention of Kennedy's infamous sex tape in Ebony, in the Ebony magazine in their February 2013 issue. The magazine claimed that Jane Kennedy's first husband leaked the sex tape, although Leon was never officially named in the article. Leon Isaac Kennedy is suing the magazine because he claimed that tape was stolen by a third party and leaked to the public and almost 10 years after the couple finalized their divorce. So Kennedy is claiming that he lost more than $35,000 in canceled ministering dates since that article hit the public. So he alleged the amount of invitations to speak at other churches and functions have gone down about 40%. He is currently seeking unspecified amount of damages. I didn't know Leon Isaac Kennedy was a minister, but he is a minister. So he's now suing Ebony Magazine, who's owned by Time Magazine, by the way. Just wanted to share that. It's the legendary African-American publication. But I think I think that's Essence that's owned by Time. I think Ebony must be stellar. All right, just let me know if I got that part wrong. Now, an East Tennessee magistrate has been replaced months after ordering a baby's name change from Messiah to Martin because she believes that Messiah is the title only held by Jesus Christ. So Lou Ann Ballou was a child support magistrate serving at the pleasure of Chief Justice of Tennessee's 4th Judicial District. Now, Judge Dwayne Sloan terminated Ballou last week and appointed a new magistrate. Now, he didn't return any calls to seeking comment, but his order does not explain why he ended her appointment. Now, Ballou, an attorney, still faces a March 3rd hearing on accusations that her order to change Messiah's name violated Tennessee's Code of Judicial Conduct. Now, among other things, the code requires judges to perform all duties without bias or prejudice based on religion, and she actually had religion in her ruling. I think she violated that. So she still has a court date of March 3rd. So we'll keep an eye on that story as well. Now, the fourth Rush Hour has been announced with Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan. So in a recent interview, Jackie Chan said, Chris annoyed them like crazy when they first met, and according to Chan, Tucker won't stop talking for the entire time they were together in the office of William Morris. He said that he also didn't understand a word that was coming out of his mouth. He didn't understand a word the entire time. So Jackie Chan has kind of, I don't know if it was planned, but he did announce that there will be a fourth Rush Hour for everybody who likes those series. And actually, I like Rush Hour, so just wanted to share that. I want to remind you, you're listening to Black on Black Crime on Esprit Radio. You can call in 909-265-9189. You know, we start off, catch you up, give you a little bit of news and information and entertainment news mainly, and to get you up to speed before we get into the show. Now, on today's show, actress Fly Girl, Jennifer Lopez, well, both of them are Fly Girls, but it's Rosie Perez versus General, I don't know why I get her name mixed up, Jennifer Lopez. So Rosie Perez has written a book. She put out some stuff, and she kind of acknowledged the feud that she's had with Jennifer Lopez. So that will be up in a second. We also have, for our topics today, Uncle Ruckus Watch. We have Sam Jackson on race movies. That should be pretty interesting. And Nicki Minaj versus Malcolm X. I'm not going to even talk about her right now. But we have that and Warren Sapp versus Michael Strahan. We'll go to that one first. That's a little lighter. So we'll go to that one first. Just wanted to remind you, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. Now, this is not even in Georgia. Nine students from the University of Georgia have surrendered to police, all being linked to a hazing allegation from a pledging event that took place in January. Now, all the men were members of the Zeta Lambda chapter of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. UGA Police Chief Jimmy Williams said that the police department obtained warrants, charged 11 individuals with hazing. There was actually a criminal code that covers hazing in Georgia, and that the 11 individuals had warrants taken out. Now, they've all been contacted and told they would need to turn themselves into the sheriff's department. According to authorities, the pledges were struck with fist during the hazing ritual, but they believe that they were only hit one at a time. Now, the entire chapter has been suspended from the campus of the University of Georgia, and as an investigation is pending. So according to the Athens Clark County jail records, nine students have been released on misdemeanor charges of hazing students. Now, that's Kappa Alpha Psi at the University of Georgia. So we'll keep an eye on that story. Don't know what it – they was hit with a fist once, but hey, they're all 11 are being charged with hazing. Just thought I'd share that story. Now, Oprah Winfrey will make her Broadway debut in a revival of the Pulitzer Prize-winning 1983 play by Marsha Norman called Night Mother. Never heard of it, but Oprah will star in a two-character play opposite the fabulous Audra McDonald, the multi-Tony Award winner, in a story about a mother, played by Oprah, who is struggling to stop her daughter from committing suicide. Now, Oprah previously revealed that she was approached by director Kenny Leon to star opposite Denzel in the Broadway revival of August Wilson's Fences about 3 years ago. That's a role that eventually went to Viola Davis, for which she won a Tony Award for, but now, Oprah has decided to do a Broadway play, and she picked a great person to do that play with. So we'll keep a lookout for that, and when we get some more information, we will kind of let you know about it. So I wanted to let you know you're listening to Black on Black Crime on Esprit Radio on the Ask Kathleen Network. You can call in and join us at 909-265-9189 to join in on a conversation. You know, I am going to eventually open up the chat room. But before I do that, let me take a quick break. Hey, I see Lavinia's on the line. I'll bring you in after this. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more of the show. Now, if you didn't know, like I said before, hey, you know what? Actually, I forgot something. Let me slow down a little bit. Now, because we've been missing for a little bit, so I have to give us a little bit of bump music. All right, so you're listening to Black on Black Crime. We'll be back. Now, this is Jennifer Lopez. I keep saying it in the wrong order. Rosie Perez versus Jennifer Lopez. We have an Uncle Ruckus Watch candidate. It's Sam Jackson. We'll be back after this. You listen to Black on Black Crime.
So I've come up with a family emergency plan.
Great. What is it?
It's difficult to talk about, so I'm not telling you.
How will we know what to do?
You won't.
I'm so glad I won't have to remember anything.
And me too. Thanks for this, sweetie.
Talk to your kids about who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information.
If I got to go to college, oh my goodness, I like discovering new things. You get to see what works for you and what doesn't. That helps you evolve as a person. You get to make like a supernova of skill or talent or whatever it is. I've always wanted to go to college. I just feel like that's my destiny. My name is Queen, and I am your dividend.
With over 200 lunch combos, there's something for everyone in the neighborhood, and they start at just $6.99.
$6.99? Consider my mind blown.
Boom.
Lunch combos at Applebee's starting at just $6.99. Now with new honey pepper flavor. See you tomorrow.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime with your host, Jerome. You can call in and join us, 909-265-9189 on this show. Rosie Perez versus Jennifer Lopez. That is our main topic. But before I do that, let's bring in Finesse. What's going on, Finesse? Got a stranger in the house. What's up, man?
Hey, you know, it's been a long time, and it's been busy, sick. And I said, I can't wait because I missed you and I missed the rest of the crew.
Cool.
And I just need some flags.
You need to throw flags at you?
Yeah, I need some flags thrown at me.
Oh, no. You're not going to get any on this show. This show is going to be pretty clean cut for you. You ain't going to have no flags because they just seem like
they're... I'll make some.
Oh, you going to make some?
I'll make some.
All right, well, cool.
Oh, yeah.
Well, cool, because since you haven't had them...
You're
right. Oh, that's true. All right, cool. What have you been up to, man? What you got on the plate?
What don't I have on the plate? We just got word today that the show I've been wanting to do for like 10, 15 years, finally got the green light, so we'll be doing that at TV show starting in May. Column has been doing great. We are now going to got our own page, a new soul page. And just been working with different clients, authors. We started a book club that's going great. It's just been busy. Today I've been truly blessed as an understatement. So it's just, and I just been busy with it. And, for January, though, I was sick. That flu bug was no joke. In December.
Oh, yeah.
But, just trying to get everything, trying to get organized and keep things perspective, keep a level ahead. Get back on this show, man. This is it started a long time ago, and I can't miss this show.
We had to run some rewinds because I was tied up and busy and under weather myself. So, over the last month or so, we did go on the rewind. So technically we're back. So since we're back live, that's why you haven't seen the pre-show text come out either. So we had to run some rewinds for that reason. But now that everybody's well and doing better.
I feel bad, but I don't feel as bad.
That's right. See, that's why I had to make sure I told you that so that you know it wasn't like, you know, Kai, who was Kai was, you know, she's in Georgia. She was in the car for 23 hours. She was stuck on the highway. Remember when they had that bad snowstorm? So Kai won't be here. Well, she may come in today, but a couple of weeks ago, there were things going on all over the place. So, you know, bad weather, stuff happens, you know. So we're all coming back. We're all coming back live.
Yeah, I just missed Kai. I was in Atlanta, and it's funny because we've got a book club that'll be starting there in March, once a month in Atlanta. And I think I had just left before all that nonsense started and then came home to Baltimore and caught the nonsense up here.
Oh, yeah, you came back right on time, right, to get the bad weather there?
Yeah. You know, it's been a crazy winter, man. It's been a crazy winter. So, I haven't seen nothing like this since I last lived in Syracuse, but, man.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't miss Syracuse. Not the weather.
Yeah, you know, the weather, hey, that's the thing. Although I haven't had a chance to ask you about sports, you know, we should do a sports segment for this, but as long as the basketball team is still undefeated, everybody's usually warm in this town. So that's cool.
As long as Syracuse is back, you know, big ups to them. You know, we might need to go back and revisit some sports. The Seattle Seahawks, congratulations to them.
Oh yeah, you know, and so I'll start it off with our first Black on Black Crime, because this is going to be short, but you know that's going to lead us into our Jonathan Martin stuff, because I know you left off on that, which is really funny. Now that the review's out, you're back. So because I got, you know, I'm going
to
yell at you about it.
And I remember correctly, I wanted to wait to after all the reviews were out.
You did say that. But you did say, nope, before we go into Jonathan Martin, let's go to this one. Now, former players Warren Sapp, NFL players Warren Sapp, both Super Bowl, versus Michael Strahan. I don't know if you heard the story where Warren Sapp, who was voted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame last year, he said he doesn't think that Michael Strahan deserves to join him this year. Now, Sapp said to the Super Bowl, during the Super Bowl media day, that Strahan wasn't good enough to make it. And he said, I don't think his resume stacks up. He only has 4 straight Pro Bowls and I can't think how he said a mythical sack record or something like that. He said, when you really measure him up, he comes short. So Sapp has been complaining for years about Strahan's sack record of 22.5, which Strahan set in last game of 2001 season when Brett Favre appeared to slide down in front of him intentionally to hand him the sack record.
I was watching that game, and I agree.
Did he? Really? I didn't see that one.
Oh, yeah. He did.
So Sapp said they were both still playing, that there should have been an asterisk next to the record because it wasn't real. So Strahan responded that there should be a McDonald's stop next to Sapp's house. Now, see, he was wrong for that because Sapp's is fat, is what he said. I think he was trying to make light of the fact that the guy slid in front of him.
Well, no. You know, since that, Sapp has come out and apologized and said he was wrong, so I guess at the end of the day, that let it be. I do agree, though, there should have been an asterisk mark because Brett Favre did give it to him. But, that's all out of respect, and that's what that is. So I don't really – if the NFL didn't have a problem with it, I don't have a problem with it.
You know, okay, so I have to say I don't have a problem with it because when – I was just revisiting old stories that we didn't do, so I wanted to talk about that a little bit just to say that even since he didn't – since – he did apologize to Strahan for saying that. That still is an emotional thing, I think, when you these guys are human. So when you talk about athletes and talk about statements that they make, you know, during the only time pretty much where they get news coverage, especially like Super Bowls, if you're football or NBA championship when you're basketball, sometimes that happens. So I have to not throw a flag on Warren Sapp for saying that. Just, I mean, like you said, if it was an asterisk, it was an asterisk. I didn't realize that he slid down in front of him.
Oh, yeah, he dropped down so he could get the sack. You know, that's the way it is. I'm quite sure the offensive line and, you know, some of those Green Bay Packers were probably a little upset because they didn't want to give him the record. But, Dan, that's what it is. NFL didn't have a problem.
Okay, but think about this from a...
got in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but think about this from a competitive point. Do you want to be the quarterback who got sacked for the final time for him? Like, I understand he handed it to him, but technically, I think competitively you don't want to do that. I remember when Magic Johnson had his HIV, went to the All-Star game. You know who was on him? Rodman. And Rodman played defense on him, and Magic still had a good game. But he thanked Rodman for coming out and actually playing defense. Unlike the All-Star game for the other day.
And that's the thing you would like, but, you know, it is what it is, and I don't have anything to say on that one.
Okay, well, all right, we'll let that one go. Now, speaking of Jonathan Martin, I did have a note for that. He did have his, from his first interview, not since the report came out, but from his first interview, he did say he felt trapped by the bullying and decided it was best to just remove myself from the situation. He said, I'm a man. I'm a grown man. I've been in locker rooms. There's vulgarity in locker rooms. And so Martin said, one instance doesn't bother me, but this teammate's behavior, it's the persistence of it. And he said he wished he would have had more tools to solve my situation, but I didn't. I felt trapped, and I didn't like the way he said, I didn't have a way to make it right, and it came down to a point where, you know, I thought it was just better to remove myself. So Martin, who's 24, started playing with the Dolphins in 2012 and left the team on October 28th. All right, so now that the reports came out, I'll give you a Stephen A. moment on this. What do you think about the report?
I told you it's two sides to every story. I told y'all two sides to every story.
Okay.
You know, Martin was at fault. I've seen some of the texts. And if that's what you allowed to happen, then that's what happened.
I still can't believe you're blaming him. I still cannot
I know. I'm not blaming him. But that was the relationship that they had. So I'm not blaming him, but I knew there was more to the story than what was being told. I'm not blaming him at all. It came out that they had that type of relationship. They both was texting each other. It is what it is. At the end of the day.
Oh, man. All right. See, I think you're not seeing this. I don't think you're seeing this clearly.
I see it quite clear.
Okay. All right. Let's bring in Coach Dean. What up, Coach?
What's going on?
Oh, all right, man, listen. The yellow banana got out? Oh,
listen,
Lord.
All I got to say is this. And Finesse, you and I have talked about this a number of occasions. And, yes, there's always three sides to the story. That person's version, Martin's version, and the one that lies in between. Now, I'm curious to know why you still feel that there's more to the story other than what was released by somebody who did an investigation. Number one. But before you go on and answer that, allow me to say this. I don't care. There's a certain degree of jokeability that I have with my Caucasian friends. There's also a certain degree of jokeability that they have with me. But as everybody knows that's listening to this conversation, and the three people who are in dialogue right now, there's certain things that your Caucasian friends can say, and there's that you won't say to your Caucasian friends. The one thing that people keep forgetting about this particular instance is this. This is a workplace situation. And obviously, Incognito stepped across the line and caused other people to come with him. Plain and simple, that dude is a straight bully, period. Now you can answer that question that I had asked you. What is it that you have seen or what is it that you feel causes you to say, well, there's still more to the story, and or what part of the story did you see that says, well, you know, Martin was at fault too?
I didn't listen. What you have to look at it is from the relationship that those two had with each other. And clearly the text messages show that they had that kind of relationship where they talked to any kind of way with each other. There was pictures that showed them and their families going on trips, whatever, whatever. I know Martin came out and said, well, and there's some psychiatrist came out and said, well, usually when a person is being offended, they try to be friends, blase, blase, blase. That's all.
So you can't blase, blase that.
Well, yeah, and you that and that was my point.
My point was,
can't blase that.
Listen,
have you not been in a locker room when somebody's been bullied, Finesse? Like,
I've been the person that's doing the bully. Listen.
So this is my point. People befriend their bullies. They befriend them.
That may be true. Well, we don't know that. I'm just saying from what it looks. And let me say this. Martin also sent a text message to what's his name and said it's not your fault. You know, I'm sorry that they're blaming you, but it's not your fault. So
there's a theory to that. Hold up, there's a theory to that. That's like a female who's getting abused that tells her family and friends, it's not my husband's fault, it's not my boyfriend's fault, it's not my girlfriend's fault. Because that's the psychological issues that have happened.
First of all, you can't say that because you don't know anything. Like, we don't ever know everything that goes on. But from the investigation, from the investigation, from what he said, and from the other people who are going to probably get fined for bullying, from the line coach knowing what was going on, calling him slurs as well, he did not feel he was in power. He was a doggone rookie. You can't take some new kid in there and put him in with the veterans and then act like, oh, well, he got along with the guy who was harassing him and taking his lunch money. That is very simple. If in any bullying situation, I don't care if it's an elementary, it is the same thing. The person can always claim, the bully can always claim that we were friends. Because that fool was scared initially to actually get on the other side of you. He was in a perfect power position.
I'm not the only one who said the same thing. Stephen A. Smith said the same thing, and he came out and apologized.
Yeah.
It's been a bunch of us.
Stephen A. Smith is wrong.
Okay, so let me just say this. What I'm still confused about is this. An independent person came through and interviewed everybody and came up with their findings. How is it that that person's findings is now incorrect because, well, Martin and Incognito were friends and they were doing dinner things and they were doing family things
and
they were doing this?
The investigator said the investigator said that there was wrong on Martin's part because they were friends. And even he interviewed
I did
Martin
not read
said,
that.
Yes. See, that's what I'm saying.
This is what you're going to have to do then. If it just seems to me, I don't want you to think that we're ganging up on you, but it just seems to me like you're reading something totally different than what the media is putting out. What is actually out there.
There's been others in the media that have said the same thing. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm saying there was a dynamic to those two. That's all I'm saying.
But it wasn't a healthy dynamic is what we're trying to get you to understand and see. And that people have to understand
see, and what I'm saying to you, there's more to it than that. Even the investigator said that. He said there was some level of bullying, but at the same time, there was a friend. That's what the investigator said.
Right.
So what I'm saying is the same thing. Is like there's more to it. They were friends. Everything that y'all saying is correct, but on a case by case. And in this case, to me, not what it should be, but to me, there was more to it. And I said this in the beginning. I did not want to talk about it until I saw the rest because it didn't sound right. That's to me. And
see,
I said that.
Okay,
did I not say that, Esprit?
Yeah, you
okay,
said
so
that.
It may be that way to you, which is true, and I hear you. And that's okay for you to feel that, and that's okay for you to digest that. However, in the sense of you saying that this is how you see it, you also have to take into consideration the way how everybody else sees it, and everybody else sees it as, all right, that's a bunch of bull.
Not everybody sees it, but that's where you're wrong. Not everyone sees it like that.
But how could we?
It's been people on Deion Sanders apologize, Marshall Faulk apologize. So it's not
okay. So let me tell you about them dudes, and you know this being a media guy. And you and I have talked about this before. Hold up. Them dudes are trying to save their jobs. There's no way on God's green earth that they're going to sit up there and support one person because they do not want to lose their jobs. It's that simple.
Listen, not Deion and Marshall. That I know.
Oh, come on now. Come on now. Come on now.
But you had other players who said it was wrong. So that's what I'm saying to you. It's some that feel the way you guys do. It's some that feel the way I do. And you can't say, well, they doing this and they doing that. That's just how they feel and the reason is, it still doesn't look right. And I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong. I'm saying based on what a person sees. Even the investigators say that.
Right, listen, I'm going to put it to you the way how I see it. Ain't no way on God's green earth a Caucasian friend of mine is going to be doing all that stuff that Incognito did to me and think that that's okay. And I'm going to tell you something else.
Or I'm going to watch somebody do that to somebody black who I'm even near. I don't care if I knew that fool. I would not let some black dude get tormented like that.
We all know there are black folks who let white people say and do things. Let's not act like that doesn't happen.
I know.
We're not going down that path, but we're not saying that.
We're not saying that. We're
saying
in this case.
And you're saying that it couldn't. We're saying you.
No. We're not saying that it couldn't. What we're saying is this. Dude, what we're saying is this. Under what is being done and what is being said by this guy Incognito is unacceptable. I don't care.
It is unacceptable.
What Martin and think about this.
I don't care what Martin says.
But here's what people got to understand. In this society, and Finesse, you know this because you are in media. In this society, people are so darn afraid to speak up in support for the person who was a victim. Martin was a victim, and it is proven. Anybody who falls victim, be it a male to abuse or a female to abuse, it is a natural, it is a psychological thing to befriend them so that it minimizes the pain and hurt that you feel, and it kind of gives you subconsciously the idea of, well, it's okay for him to pick on me, so I'm going to throw some jabs to him. I'm going to throw some jabs at him because it's only the right thing to do.
I'm not saying that's not. But what that does is go back to what you said. You said that others, or basically others didn't do anything. We do know that happened. We do know that happened. And there are people that don't. How you and I were reacting is different. I told you the story about my homeboy, I had to punch him in the mouth. But that's me. Others, like those other players on the football team, let that happen.
Right.
Not,
they're
again,
at work.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I hear y'all. I do. So don't tell me I'm not getting it. I do get it. I'm just telling you how it looks to me. And there's still stuff that has come out. That's all I'm saying.
Right, but we're saying whatever comes
Martin,
out.
I'm not defending Incognito.
See,
I'll be honest. It sure sounds like it.
Because you're being neutral, Finesse, is why that is. It's just like watching Trayvon Martin, and I don't mean to bring this stuff in here, but it's like watching Trayvon Martin and hearing George Zimmerman's side of the case and saying, I don't really know what happened because I wasn't there. And we know for sure, this is what we know as black folks. We have all been in situations where a rent-a-cop has run up on us like they have no sense. And then they cried later like we were the aggressor. We watched this happen in this case where this guy just this weekend just got a mistrial for for first-degree murder on the in the other kid in Florida, because white jurors said, as soon as he went on there and said, I was in fear for my life, that that is reasonable. What we're saying is that it is very plausible in being bullying and being bullied for the person being bullied to act like they're friends. And so everybody's saying that they were friends, but he had to keep up appearances that he wasn't getting his lunch money taken from him. I mean, didn't he have to pay that, like $30,000 to give gifts to the play? Like, who? They, somebody took your money.
The investigator said that that was not the case. He had to do it that one time for rookies, and everyone has come out and said to do that. He did that. This is
but,
what
yeah, but not everybody. Listen, everybody has come out and said that rookies had to buy and pay for stuff for Ness, but everybody also came out and said that rookies don't have to pay $30,000. There are a lot of people who, when this first there's a lot, ho, there's a lot of people who came out during all of these NFL shows that said flat out, $30,000 is excessive. That's way too much for a rookie, and no rookie has ever paid that much. $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, yes. $30,000 is very excessive. Everybody that I saw on TV that brought that up and talked about it has said that. I've never heard one person say that $30,000 was acceptable for a rookie to pay for the veterans. Never heard that.
Both Emmitt Smith and Marshall Faulk said their bills was that high, and they the other veterans chipped in. So I have heard it both ways.
Oh,
all
stop,
I'm saying
stop.
Is,
what did you just say?
Wait, you said you never heard that. I just said that there was.
Finesse, I did say that I never heard that, but what I'm telling you is you just brought up the fact that other veterans chipped in. Nobody chipped in to Martin.
You said there was no bill that was ever that high.
No, that's not what I said. What I said was people who were on TV came forward and said that there was no rookie.
And I said that there was. And all I'm saying to you that there was. Listen, again, you're trying to tell me that I'm not taking sides. All I'm saying to you is there was more to
the appearance is that you are.
You know why, Finesse? Because what he said was this. He said that they never paid that much. You just said that the other veterans chipped in so that the guys didn't have to pay so much.
Thank you.
Well, I thought he never heard of the bill. He never heard a bill that high. He didn't say
that.
I
said that everybody came on TV and said that they never heard of a rookie paying $30,000. You said that Marshall Faulk and whoever came on said, well, that is true, they have, but other veterans chipped in. There is a distinct difference between the two.
But that's fine, but there was a bill, but that's fine. But again, I'm just saying. Because you guys want me to say that he's wrong.
No, we don't want to say, and I'm not
agreeing with anybody. I'm saying to you what the arbitrator said, and he said there's still more. And all I'm saying is that's what I've been – I didn't even want to talk about it the first time. Because I said there's more to the story where everybody else was jumping on it. I said there's more.
And there was more to
it.
Trayvon Martin's story. There was more to Michael Dunn's story. There was more to the gay guy that got killed in the 90s story. There's more to everybody's story. But what is fact is what was already spoken.
No, you can't do that. It's case by case. You can't sit here and say, and that's what I'm saying to you, until I saw the facts, that's why I didn't want to hear. And what I see, there was still more, and like the arbitrator said, I think that they were friends. Now,
yeah, but that's his impression.
You can be friends, and I know all that. You can be friends with your abuser, whatever. I just said, for me, there seemed more, because it doesn't seem right.
Yeah, you're right. The situation didn't seem right. And what didn't seem right was this dude doing what he did to that other guy. And it could have been reversed. It could have been a black guy doing it to a white guy. It still doesn't make the situation right.
And you know what doesn't seem right is that the Miami organization turned a blind eye to that. The league probably is going to come in too because of that. If you have to fire your line coach because they said that from some of their news reports that I saw that they may not renew the coaches' contract because he knew what was going on and he participated, which was kind of worse.
See, they came out and said the coach was clear. Everyone said coach didn't know, so he was able to keep his job. But the general manager and with somebody else, they got fired, and the line coach.
That's what I meant. The line coach, though. That's what I was talking about.
The line coach is gone. The coach is dead because there was word that they thought the coach was, but the coach had nothing to do. He didn't know.
Okay, and so here's my thing, and we'll make this quick and move on to our next black on black crime subject. But it, you know what it reminds me of, and it kind of pisses me off to really think about this, but it reminds me of the whole Bernie Fine situation with Syracuse basketball, because this kid comes in, ruined that guy's life. He can't coach or even be around people because they brought Fed in when he lied. And even when Boeheim in a press conference said, that kid is lying, everybody jumped on him. And then about a year later, the kid said, oh, yeah, I was lying. And would you have no recourse when you are in the spotlight like that, when you make any statement, like when you, as an athlete, so Martin is getting jumped on one way, and there's nothing you can do. So when you come out and say something is going on with you, you better be a really strong, wealthy person, because you're going to be outcast as soon as you do it. Everybody's still putting doubt on Martin, and he may not even be able to come back in the league because of that. Because it's like, okay, now he disrupted the locker room.
I'm not saying that you did that. What? Oh, okay. Because I think,
I'm saying generally how these news stories are spinning out of control.
Yeah, and there's been, well, let me leave that alone. I will not say that. I don't want to get in trouble. Because I know some other stuff, but I'm not at liberty to say.
Right. Okay. So, like I said, we're gonna just keep it clean and keep it moving. But it's just a shame when that happens, because it just shows you that when you're bullied, and we've been in locker rooms, we've seen the kids who get bullied, whether it's in elementary, junior high, or college. We know that what happens is that when you're in those positions, you are flat powerless until you walk away from it, and then when you walk away from it, everybody denies it. Everybody denies it. Even if they knew, they go, because they don't want to go down with the guy who just left. So that's a hard topic to talk about. Anyway, all right, so I want to remind everyone, you're listening to the Black on Black Crime. This was outside of our scope. There was no black on black crime on the Warren Sapp, Michael Strahan. Hey, Coach Dean, you want to comment on that? Did you hear that story? The Michael Strahan.
No, what happened?
With Warren Sapp just saying that Michael Strahan didn't deserve to be voted into the Hall of Fame because Brett Favre took a dive to give him the last sack, to give him the record.
This is a situation where, you know, somebody wants to look at something specific. Anytime someone gets elected into the Hall of Fame, it's on their total body of work. I don't believe it was because of him breaking the record, because there's tons of people who have broken records who are not in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, you got to look at the body of work that Michael Strahan has done, not only for the Giants, but for pro football during that era and that time. Now, me personally, I don't think he's Hall of Fame worthy, because there's a lot of guys who I felt were better than him at that position who should have been in the Hall of Fame.
There might be a flag on Coach Dean today.
And there's no, that's not hate. I'm just saying, it's true. Listen, Finesse, you're a football guy. There's many more people that played that position that Strahan has played that played it better who are not in the Hall of Fame and should be elected into the Hall of
Fame. There's a lot of cats that should be in the Hall of Fame, but, you know.
And that's all I'm saying. He's okay. He's worthy of being voted in, but I don't think he should have been voted in on the first ballot.
And that was the thing. It was the first ballot vote in is what he was.
Was it the first or was it the second?
No, it was the first.
First. This was the first time he was up.
Well, I didn't think first, second, or third he should have been on there. There are tons of other players that should have got in before Strahan. I was actually shocked that he got in, because other than the fake 23.5 sacks that he had, you know, he won one Super Bowl, and it wasn't because of him. Yeah, it's fake.
Okay.
You know, Brett Favre gave him one. I'm quite sure his team was like, yo, He didn't want to get his fool the sack record against us because that's a team, you know, that offensive line looks bad. They gave up a sack because that's how it goes down. It doesn't seem
Brett Favre at it that way, or you could also look at it this way. Brett Favre didn't want to get injured, and it was towards the end of the game. It wasn't like it.
Oh, no.
You know.
Brett Favre gave it to him and said he deserved it because he was a good
Did he say he gave it to him?
Yeah.
He did yeah. say he gave it to him, but, you know, that's like me saying, yeah, I let Finesse score that layup.
Hey,
you know what I mean? We don't know if it's serious or not.
It is almost like watching the what was it, the NBA All-Star game. You're like, he gave him that shot. You know, it's like
gave
it to him. All right, that happens. That happens that somebody just gives it away. All right, so we're not gonna take a break, but I just want to remind everyone, you listen to Black on Black Crime. I have a story here. Now, I usually don't do pop stuff, but for some reason I had this on the docket about the Nicki Minaj thing with Malcolm X image. I don't know if you guys saw that. But she apologized for using the image of Malcolm X holding a rifle on her artwork.
Too late.
She released a video, and it had looking beep. N-word on there. So the 31-year-old released this profanity-laced video on Wednesday for her song for her upcoming third album. I'm not going to say the name. The singer received immediate backlash from some who felt that it was misappropriated the image of the iconic leader Malcolm X, Al-Haj, Malik Al-Shabazz. But here's the thing. It is Black History Month at that, and she had no... She had no clue that she was going to disrespect him. So she said, do you have a problem with me referring to the people Malcolm X is already – this is what Nicki Minaj wrote, by the way. She said, what seems to be the issue now? It was a question. Do you have a problem with me referring to the people Malcolm X was ready to pull his gun out on as whatever, N-words, opposed to the image of the video holding a rifle? She didn't know which one that they were pissed off at. Was it his image or was it her holding a rifle? I think they cleared that up. So she said she apologized that was never the official artwork of her single. Didn't Lil Wayne do this? Then she's on his label,
yes,
right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
okay.
Did the same thing with Emmett Till. Well, he wrote put the lyrics about Emmett Till
and then he apologized for it. She said, "This is not a conversation." I don't know why she said that. Not a single. She said, "It is in no way to undermine his efforts and legacy. I apologize to the Malcolm X estate if the meaning of the photo was misconstrued." She thought that they got it wrong. I don't understand. But anyway, she said she wrote the song to empower women because there was too many songs. She tried to deflect.
Ain't nothing about that song empowering. I heard the lyrics, and I went off on her on Friday about that. It's, she don't want no song. In a song, there's a part where she says, and I can't use the word, but basically, why are men staring at her? If you see the video, which I won't tell you where to go look.
Why not? Tell us where to go look, because I want to see it.
You got to Google
I'll
that.
I'll tell you offline. I ain't about to tell you online.
I know that's right.
People find it if they want to. But you can't help but look because of what she has on. The song, there is no lyrics. It's just the title of the track. And it is on her album, so she lied about that. She gave a half excuse, you know.
Right.
And I blame Cash Money because this is the second time. This is not the first time. The Emmett Till, they did it, and now they did it with Malcolm X. And from what I heard from Malcolm X's daughter today, she is living. And once you put that stuff out there, you can't take it back in social media.
So let me ask this as a reporter. Could it be that they've done both of these things to create and cause attention to make more money to sell their product?
No, they're sellouts, and they don't know their history.
Yeah, I think that they did it. Sometimes people do things out of disrespect by thinking that it's empowering them. So she was attracted to the gun, and she thought it was gangster for her to do it. I don't think that she intentionally, you know, tried to cause an uproar. Who would do that? Like, some people do things that try to get close to the edge, but this wasn't even close. She didn't – I don't think they had an intention on using that. She probably saw the poster, and I think that's what she said. They saw the poster and was like, oh, that'll be cool to put on there. It was kind of that much of a thought. You know, and she did right. I have nothing but respect and adore and adoration for you. The photo was removed hours ago, and thank you is what she concluded on her, what she wrote on her social media, on her Instagram.
Well, once you put it out there, you can never take it back because you can still go find it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I found it, but, you know, of course I'm not going to post it. But the problem is that she defeats the purpose. She just got beside herself. So okay. So just because
and the
lady, she is,
you know, Cash Money is just as responsible. I said in the post on Friday. So no one out of that in that whole group was like, "Yo, this is a bad idea." No one said
or
that.
We need to ask permission. Why didn't they ask the state for permission to use his image? That is more important to me.
That's why they don't get a pass on that. Because
well, that's an age-old black-on-black crime. We don't ask for permission to use nobody's likeness. A la Boondocks moment. A la Boondocks moment when everybody doing all this Martin Luther King stuff, and he comes back saying, hey, I ain't getting no credit for this.
right. Everybody got a Martin Luther King Boulevard. Everybody got a Martin Luther King Day sale. Nobody consults the King family on what they can use his image on. And so, all right. So, I thought I'd share that part. And by the way, you know, we created a segment on this program called Uncle Ruckus Watch, speaking of the Boondocks. And Sam Jackson has made it many old days. But Sam Jackson
is
now.
Sam Jackson
now,
the Boondocks Watch. I hope it's not because of the reporter thing.
No. No. It's not even for that because, you know, actually, and I'm not saying that it's an Uncle Ruckus moment, but here we'll do it. This is Uncle Ruckus Watch. We'll do the Uncle Ruckus Watch for this. I won't even give you the drop music for Uncle Ruckus Watch on this one because in an interview with the International Business Times over the weekend, Sam Jackson said that Hollywood – by and large, still avoids dealing with racism, and 12 Years a Slave is a perfect example of that. Now, according to Jackson, the only reason why the film got made was because director Steve McQueen is British and not African-American. So Jackson said, I would think that if an African-American director went into a studio and pitched that particular film, they would have been like, no. It's not a film about African Americans, a dark period of history that they don't like to explore in that particular way. And he further added, look, I'm glad 12 Years a Slave got mad, and it's wonderful that people seeing it, that people are seeing it, and there's another view of what happened in America, but I'm not really sure why Steve McQueen wanted to tackle that particular sort of thing. And he went on to say that Fruitvale Station was more honest and braver.
I was with him until then.
Exactly. I was with him until he got to the point. He said, why would you tackle slavery? Now, that is why he's on Uncle Ruckus Watch. Because I don't know. That seems kind of strange that you said, hey, I'm glad it got made. I'm glad people got a chance to see it. But why would you make it? But no African Americans could make it, but the British guy made it, and we're glad he made it, but why would he make it? Does that make sense?
Well, can I add something about that?
Add
something to that? Because it's 12 years late. I think another reason why Hollywood jumped on it is because Brad Pitt was one of the executive producers and brought it to the attention and picked Steve McQueen to direct it. And also, too, there's been these teachers who said, we need this book in class to teach. And so I like the fact that they're going to bring this into the classrooms and show exactly what happened with slavery. I think that's a good thing. So there's some positive things. And I also think Sam was hating because...
I think Sam was hating because of Django.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Because of Django.
Hey, well, go there. It was because of Django.
And I'm
hey, Coach, I know you want in on it.
It's hilarious because it's fitting.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. As much as he took out for Quentin Tarantino's butt, and, you know, you can cuss and say the N-word, and that's all right, and Pulp Fiction, this and that, and all of that nonsense about being a real black experience, he's going to say, I don't know why he would have particularly – I don't know that that particular thing should have been tackled. How was he going to say that? The guy
because
who does Negro movies.
He's Steven from Django. What else were you expecting to say?
See, that, again, I should have played the theme song for the Uncle Ruckus watch for him. Now, Jackson went on to say that such films as Fruitvale Station is more honest and braver than 12 Years a Slave. It dealt with subject and race in America. It explains things like the shooting of Trayvon Martin, the problems with Stop and Search, Stop and Frisk Nut, and is more poignant to situation. America is much more willing to acknowledge what happened in the past. We freed the slaves. It's all good. But to say that we are still unnecessarily killing black men, let's have a conversation about that. Sam Jackson is teetering. You know what I mean? Like, I can understand what he's saying, but he has a very weird schizophrenic way of defending black people. Like, he's on your side, but he's not. But he is, but he's not. I don't
He sounds real stupid because it sounds like he don't know his history, because this is a true story.
Yeah,
so you go with Fruitful Station, that's a true story, but you wouldn't want to do 12 Years a Slave, which is a true story and affected so many people.
And it's not just a true story. It is a true story that he wrote. Like, that's his firsthand account. He didn't have a ghostwriter. He wrote it very much in detail. And from what I understand, just from Steve McQueen talking about it, I watched a couple of interviews with him, he's saying it was so detailed in his writing, how could we not put it in a movie? You know, even the screenwriter said that. He said, as screenwriters, we like to make books our own as a movie. He said that Solomon Northrup did such a good job on this that I didn't really touch it so much because it was so well written.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what was up with him. All right. So that would be he's going to stay on an Uncle Ruckus. That's why he's on Uncle Ruckus watch. See, I was going to defend him. I really couldn't.
Tell Sam Jackson. It's okay. They're going to remake Shaft.
They're not going to remake Shaft. You know.
Yes, they are.
And,
they talk about remaking it the right way.
Are they really?
Yeah. Because neither one of them, John Singleton and Samuel Jackson, were not happy. There were a lot of scenes that were cut out of that movie. They wanted to, you know, the studio heads wanted to clown it. So John Singleton is talking about taking his own money and remaking and doing Shaft the right way. They said Richard Roundtree had more involved in it than the first one, and the studio just came in and messed it up.
Yeah, that sounds like what would normally happen. And by the way, in case you haven't heard, you know, John Singleton has agreed to take on Tupac's biopic. He's been brought in. He's going to rewrite the screenplay and then do the casting to do Tupac's biopic. So that was
notorious one too.
Well, I didn't see that one. See, I'm not gonna bash it. I didn't see it, but I'm glad that John Singleton.
You didn't miss anything.
Gosh. Well, I'm glad they finally got somebody who knew Tupac to actually go in and do it. See, remember we had this conversation on Black Crime before about, because there was conversations about white directors directing black biopics, and they kept saying, you know, white folks can interpret black people's experiences and blah, 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 and they went through that for a while, and some people it just does not work for. Because whatever that your director sees to be the important part of your life is what they focus on. And so I forgot who's doing James Brown's now, but it's just interesting. So in 12 Years a Slave with Steve McQueen, it is fitting that Steve McQueen said, you know, when they asked him about being British, he said he grew up in the islands, in the Virgin Islands, some area there. He said, my parents got split off that same boat. He said, my mother and sister probably went south, and my father and her husband probably went to America. He said, we're all off the same tree. So he won't even take that as an argument that he's British, so why would he do a slave movie? He's like, we were all in that piece. So I have to give it up to Steve McQueen for owning that.
Here's some good news, because we might get some bad news during the Oscars. 12 Years a Slave. How do you pronounce his name, the actor that played Sam?
Chetawal Ejiofor.
Well, anyway, he won for best. This is the British Awards, folks. Don't be going around putting Finesse said that he won for Oscar. This is the British. He won for best
the British
actor.
Yep.
Yes. And I believe the film won best film.
Yes. Yeah. So they're getting awards all over the place. They're doing a great job.
Not in America, but yeah.
Right, but when you said, oh, by the way, I meant to say, when you said about the Hollywood studios doing this film, Hollywood studios did not want to invest in that film. So Brad Pitt was there.
It sure did.
They had a foreign company. Well, they had a foreign company come in, and if you remember, they played it in the Toronto Film Fest and other film festivals, and they had limited release. They started with 17 theaters, went up to like 200, and then went to 400 because they thought there were going to be race riots in this country. So 12 Years a Slave never had as many screens as any of those other movies because of the fear of the studios of showing it in America. So it was handicapped to begin with.
Yeah.
So
they are not brave. No. When we here in Baltimore, we had the artsy theater, which is the Charles Theater, which I think they're great. They show a lot of great independent films. Fruitvale Station was there. Other theaters wouldn't touch it. 12 Weeks of Slave had been here a month playing at that theater. And then when the reviews and all this other stuff, then the other movie theaters start picking it up. It was hilarious because Charles Theater was the only one who would play it here in Baltimore. And Baltimore is 73% black. And Charles Theater was the only one that would play it.
Yeah, that's where the fear was, that if black people saw that, they would not like white folks. Can you believe that everybody's still protecting the fact that black people may want payback? That is usually the fear, that if they see this, they're going to really get mad. So that's why the attempt is always to oppress or suppress whatever knowledge that we have. Now, I don't know
it's hilarious, though, Ron, because we went to the screening, and the number of white folks who got up and that got up because they couldn't take it. I'm talking because the film is very truthful and brutal. There was no glorifying nothing. Roots looked like the Peanuts compared to this film.
And Toronto, when they had the press screening, they said people were just going out of there crying first 5 minutes. They were out of there.
Yeah, they were leaving. White folks got up and left between 10 and 15 minutes. They couldn't take it. And they thought something was going to happen because you got a black theater. And even the black folks, they were black folks, women that just like, yo, I can't take it. And they left.
Actually, I spoke to a couple of people who just said that everybody in the theater was just crying. Like in this they said that people were just in the theater after like the first 8 minutes of the movie, debating if they should leave or not. It was just like that heart-wrenching for black folks. And I have to tell you a little secret, because this is actually pretty interesting to the movie. Now, I didn't see the movie. I encourage people to see it if that's what you want to see. But there's a scene in there where, and I always say this, and Coach Dean knows that I always advocate the same thing. It's why you're not supposed to really get mad at white folks, because you're supposed to have it in front of your mind. But that is a part of their psyche, right? Like it's a part of a system. So what happened was that there's a scene, and I was describing it to a friend of mine, his wife, and I said there's a scene where there are three people hanging from trees and white folks come out doing laundry, kids are playing in the park. That's how normal that it was to white folks to see black folks hanging. That was it. She said, you know, during that scene, everybody is crying in the theater. There's this white couple sitting in front of her. She said the woman had her head on the guy's shoulder, and she said, I thought she was upset. They were in there kissing. While this scene was going on, she said it did not move the white folks in the theater. They were laughing, playing. And she goes, I could not understand it and did not want to see them when I got out of the theater. That's how much that doesn't affect their sight. And they were young. She says the problem was they were young. And I said, you have to remember that they grew up desensitized to this stuff. That's why if you want to see a true slavery movie, 12 Years a Slave is going to hurt your feelings, because then that lets you know that, I'm going to say this, it's a little graphic for people who have kids, but they were actually cooking black folks and eating their livers and stuff and taking pieces of their ear home for souvenirs when they did lynchings. But we don't talk about that. We act like Sam Jackson, that slavery was just clean cut. Everybody was like, cool. Y'all free? Cool. But they don't know about the brutal stuff that happened during slavery. So it was just interesting.
I told everybody that asked me to see it, I said, you need to eat before you come to this
place. Or not. You might not want anything.
You will not be eating anything
after.
I'm telling you. I didn't even, and I'm a popcorn guy when I go to the theater. I couldn't even finish my popcorn. It was, it's truly graphic, and it didn't pull no punches at all.
Yeah. Now, Coach Dean, you know a descendant of Solomon Northrup, right? With your neighbor.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Matter of fact, Clayton Adams has been going around throughout the country on behalf of the book and the movie as a direct descendant of Brother Northrup. So, you know, it's one of those things where they say, you know, you're happy for, you know, a friend of yours who has the opportunity to have their history being brought to the forefront of anybody's mind. But I'm exceptionally excited simply because of this being a true depiction of history, not only for his family, but for, you know, African Americans and black folks alike. So, he's been doing his thing. Matter of fact, and it was interesting because while all of the final things were being pieced together and right before the movie was released, Brother Adams was very sick in the hospital. And, like, as soon as he got out of the hospital, he hit the ground running. So, you know, blessings to him and his family. And you know, I couldn't be more proud because, as you remember, Rome, these guys were little kids, man, when we were, you know, teenagers, and now they're adults and they're doing their thing. So, yeah, it was wonderful to see him.
Yeah, and it adds a little something to it that, you know, we grew up with them. And, you know, Chuck, his brother who passed, is when I went to college, he was at the college that I went to. So it was cool that the guy who I've seen since when he was playing Pop Warner at Kirk Park, you know, to see somebody ahead of you. So just to have the connection was cool. Go ahead, Finesse.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Coach Dean.
Yes, sir.
They're making another one for Kevin Dorsey called 12 Shades of Slaves.
Oh, here we go. Somebody's about to get muted. All right. I want to remind you, see, we didn't take any breaks on today's show because I thought Finesse would kind of float through this, but we will not take one today. You're listening to Black on Black Crime. Finesse just committed one. He just wanted the flag. That's all. Lucky Commission isn't on here. He's not getting one.
And it's on record.
And it's on record. I'll take him out in the archive just to let him know. We won't do that. All right. Oh, Lord. All right, you can call in and join us, 909-265-9189, to stop Finesse on his role. And, Kevin, if you're out there, you can always call in, and I won't mute you. You'll have uninterrupted, unfiltered access to Finesse. Exactly. We honor the I can't think of what it's called, but the whatever decree that what is it called, Finesse? That allows you to speak freely.
The name of the film.
Go ahead.
12K.
Yeah. Oh, here you go. All right. Hold on.
Oh my goodness. I think we might have lost the host.
We may have. He probably laughing so hard he hit the wall. He tried to mute me and muted himself.
Lord have mercy.
12 shades.
Okay, you didn't go to town on me, did you?
Nah, we were. He said you muted. You tried to mute him, and ended up muted yourself.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't drop that. See, okay, again, I didn't take a commercial break, but I could have. Matter of fact, maybe we should. Is he feeling any better?
Oh, I'm feeling great. That's just a classic to me.
This is what?
That was just a classic to me.
Oh, no, you had to do a classic. All right, here's what we're going to do. We will take a break. I'm going to play for a break. I'm going to play Steve McQueen's interview on Arsenio, where he talks about 12 years to slave a little bit. And then we're going to come back and do our main topic. That's Rosie Perez versus Jennifer Lopez. You're listening to Black on Black Crime with Finesse and Coach Dean. We'll be back after this message. All right, hold on, fellas. No comments there from you, Finesse.
Okay.
You got this book from your wife?
Yes, my wife found the book because I had this original idea of a free man who was kidnapped and tricked into slavery. But then that's all I had, and I hooked up with John Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him the idea. I said, look, this is an idea, and we can work on an idea, a script for this idea I had. Things were going along slowly at that time. My wife said, why don't you look into first-hand accounts into slavery? I said, of course, she being a historian. And we both looked into, did some research on this, and she uncovered this book, 12 Years a Slave. I mean, this book had been lost for 150 years. And what's so incredible about this book, 12 Years a Slave, by Solomon Northup, it is, I mean, what can I say? Solomon Northup is an American hero.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I live in Amsterdam, and I when I read the book, it was almost like reading Anne Frank's diary for the first time.
Wow.
And that's how important an icon he is in American history.
What's your ultimate goal for that book? What would you like to see happen?
I want this book in every school in the United States. That will be my, I mean, that's I mean, I know we sold more copies of this book in 6 months of the film being released than 150 years of it being out in the public. I mean, it's on the best, it's on the top 10 seller list in the New York Times sellers list.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, that we can present Solomon and give him the due rights he deserves, because he is an American hero, and undoubtedly.
I love the realism and the gritty
approach
to slavery, by the way. And I love the respect that you've given what it truly was. You know, we in pop culture have started to use slavery a lot. Many of us, black and white, using slavery a lot as this pop metaphor to our minor pains and discomforts.
Mm-hmm.
And we do our ancestors such an injustice by that. I like that you showed slavery for exactly what it is. And I know you get a lot of criticism for the violence and the way that you've done it. But I'll let you talk about all that.
Well, either I was making a film about slavery or I wasn't. And I decided I wanted to make a film about slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, slavery, of course. How is it possible that you get these people for 400 years who are held in bondage through mental, physical, and psychological torture?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I wanted to make that film, you know. And also, it's about, you know, survival. It's about love. It's about why I and you are sitting here now. Because our ancestors wanted the best for us. Whatever difficulty they had, they wanted to survive and nurture and bring their children up.
Yeah.
And they did so through love, you know.
Yeah.
In the midst of violence, of course, but through love. You know, this kind of film hasn't been made before. quite frankly, and therefore I wanted to give a real portrayal of slavery. So, you know, why hasn't it been done before? I don't know. In a way, I do know. I think, of course, there was a huge amount of embarrassment and a huge amount of shame about that particular time in history in America, and understandably so. But I think now people are willing to engage and look at the history, possibly for the first time, in a way that maybe they haven't done before. And I think it's no small thing that Barack Obama is the president. In fact, I feel it allowed artists, not just filmmakers, to have the authority to tell their story.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. I'm on with Finesse and Coach Dean. What's up, fellas?
What up?
All right, did we lose Finesse? He must have a phone.
No, I'm here.
No, he ain't going nowhere.
All right,
I'm here.
All right, so we're going to go into our main topic. This is Rosie Perez versus Jennifer Lopez. Now, I know we had a lot more stories, some news and information. It is Black History Month, so just like we should be doing Black History anyway, I guess I should give you a little Black History moment. Now, I'll do it really quickly. Now, John Dove, who is the inventor, he invented and patented the laser light technology using the CD-ROM, DVD, and in the laser disc. It revolutionized how data is stored and transferred. He developed it in 1968, so every time you look at your DVR or look at any technology that has small circuitry, just know black man has something to do with how data is stored to make those devices work. And Otis Boykin invented the electronic control device for guided missiles, IBM computers, and the control unit for a pacemaker. So all of those things are possible because black folks actually put in work. I just thought I'd say it that way. All right, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. You can dial in 909-265-9189. Our main topic, Rosie Perez and Jennifer Lopez. Now, the New York Post is reporting that Rosie Perez and Jennifer Lopez has some serious bad blood, and Rosie Perez has a new memoir out called A Handbook for Unpredictable Life. It's coming out on February 25th. Now, the two Puerto Rican actresses, fly girls and all that, they met in 1991 at an open casting call for In Living Color, where Perez was the choreographer. And Perez immediately noticed, you know, Jennifer Lopez she said that she was a beautiful girl with a big butt. She didn't say but, of course. But that's what Rosie Perez said about her. And then Keenan Ivory Wayans, wasn't taken by J-Lo. He called her chubby and corny and refused to hire her. But this is not the black-on-black crime, by the way. But Perez became an advocate for her and talked Wayans into hiring her if she cut her hair and dropped 20 pounds. So she did that. And Keenan hired her. Now, after a while, Rosie Perez says in her memoirs that all the girls were coming into my office complaining about how she was manipulating the wardrobe, makeup, and me, all to her advantage. And Lopez shrugged it off and saying the girls were just jealous. But Lopez dropped the sweet girl act and went off on Perez like some ghetto B is what she said, screaming and pounding her chest is what Perez wrote. She said, Jennifer Lopez said. She said, you pick on me and only me every effing day. I work my butt off to deliver and you keep pushing me aside, treating me like the S word. And she says, I know I'm good, I'm better than these girls, and I know you know it, is what Lopez said to her. Now, here's my question. Is that a crime to even recant your beef with somebody in the past when you write your own memoirs? I'll start with Finesse. What do you think about what she said?
I don't even understand why she put it in the book. I mean, other than just to sell, because it's, who cares? That kind of stuff happens.
Well, but it's her story, though. I mean, it's her life story. If she was having a big, you have to remember, okay, so J-Lo left the show after season two, but she didn't drop her beef. So Perez says that she made some disparaging comments about her after she made it big in Hollywood. So Perez said that she was blindsided because she thought they were cool. She said, I called her up. She wouldn't pick up the phone. I was frustrated, left her a message on the answer machine instead of calling me back to hash it out like friends do. She went on major talk shows and reiterated my lashing, like what Rosie said to her. So Jennifer started saying Rosie Perez is crazy and blah, blah, blah. But Jennifer has had a bigger stage than Rosie to complain. So I would think that Rosie would have every right to put it in her book. If Jennifer Lopez went out and started talking about, huh?
Well, now that you put it like that, I didn't know the whole thing, you know. Yeah, they should have said it like West Side Story.
Oh God, that wouldn't be stereotypical. Like, what? Just go in the middle of the street. One from Brooklyn, one from the Bronx.
They should have did it like a little dance off or something.
They could have had a dance off.
Oh, so what
you
saying? Like,
that is just
episode
of
Fame?
That's
wrong. Oh, God.
Wait, what was that movie? The movie with Omarion and his brother? The little dancing movie? Go ahead and bat it out. Well, you know what's sad about this? This is something, like, for the last 2 to 3 months, I have rarely been on Facebook. I have rarely even watched TV because it seems like people are using both forums as an opportunity to keep the negativity swirling. So was Rosie Perez right or wrong? In her mind, the way how she felt at that moment in time, it was right for her to do. Because when you think about it, it's like, okay, she's had the stage to say she being Rosie, not Rosie, but Jennifer Lopez, has had the stage to do what she wanted to do in terms of bashing Rosie Perez. And I'm quite sure it probably was more than once. So, as you know, with people who look like you and I, brown skin and black and dark skin people, we have a certain way that we feel, okay, you got me now. But when my time comes, I'm going to get you. So in essence, in an effort to show that you're a bigger person, Rosie should have left it out. However, Rosie felt some kind of way at that moment, and that was her opportunity to either A, be, you know, correct the situation, or B, okay, I'm going off on you now. And here it is. And you know what? It could have been to be one of those things to sell her book. You know, people do some of the strangest and darndest things to make that money.
I still say she get to tell her story. So when you get to write your own book, that if somebody wronged you and you want to tell that story later, I'm sure there's plenty of stories that we all can write that we need to set the record straight before we pass. And so if you're writing your memoirs, you get to tell it. To make sure you're on the record, and that's probably what it was. Now, further on in the book, she said months later, the two bumped into each other at a club. Jennifer came over to me smiling, saying hello as if nothing happened, and I should have let it go, played it off, but instead I killed her with my biting tongue, like she just cussed her out, because you can't do that to somebody and act like you didn't do it.
Also have to look at it this way, too. You got to know who you're dealing with. Now, granted, Jenny may be from the block, but Rosie's from the streets.
I don't know what block Jenny's from, but Rosie, she ain't want to roll up on her like that.
I'm saying? That's like Rosie is a person that you just don't say what you got to say and act all cutesy and cool, like, oh, we cool and everything, we girls and everything, and you get up in the face and start smiling. That's just not going to happen. You see what I'm saying?
Hey, so, now, I don't mean to to bring up negative stuff, but it's just like after Jenny was hanging out with Puffy, all of that heat on her, she was just like, I don't want no more beef, probably. She was just done. She ran up on Rose in the club and was like, hey, come on now. Everything cool. That's my impression. Hey, there's no crime there. I'm just saying, she probably, once you become a movie star, you think you better than they being Patty. And so Rosie probably was pissed at her. So anyway, so for me, I'm going to take a null on this. I think that you have a right to write your memoirs any way you see fit. We are all going to have some really great stories to tell. So when we put pen to paper, I'm sure, especially T. Dean and his story about his
nothing down on paper, man.
I'm just saying, like, let's just say you wrote a story about your high school basketball experience. I'm sure that may not be a good ending to how you're going to interpret that. But hey,
I'm gonna tell you this way. Hey, my book is gonna have that parental advisory because I'm telling everything how it was said, how it happened, and the way it went down.
That's right. And I'm sure Finesse will have one, but he's gonna need more than that sticker. He's gonna need like a Luther Campbell. He's gonna have to go to court and actually defend. Finesse, I'm sorry, you can't put out a book. I'm just going to say that for the record.
Hey, was that a black-on-black crime right there?
I committed one.
There is a book out. Chapters, part 2, 3, and 4 going to be out next.
All right, well, just wanted to share that. All right, so, you know, just to recap, you listen to Black-on-Black Crime. You know, we did talk about the Warren Sapp, Michael Strahan situation. We did an Uncle Ruckus watch with Sam Jackson in the race movies. We played a clip from Arsenio Hall. If you get a chance to check out Arsenio's show, I think is a really good show. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch Arsenio, but if you saw the show that he did on Martin Luther King's birthday, the Alphas came in and stepped. He had Maya Angelou on there, and she talked about her relationship. You know, she was close with Malcolm, and she talked about Martin dying on her birthday and that she was supposed to meet him about 2 weeks after that. Like, she had to go to her birthday, some event that they were having, but she was going to help him raise money. And it gives you a perspective on black people just didn't hate each other across the board. Either I was with him or I was with them. And just to hear, you know, Smokey Robinson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar talk about, you know, civil rights and what they went through. Arsenio's show is worth its weight in gold as far as black folks are concerned. Now, it's an unfiltered, and they didn't put on a Justin Timberlake to water it down or Robin Thicke just to make white folks feel comfortable. He did a black show for Martin Luther King's birthday, so I have to give it up to Arsenio. So technically we promote Arsenio on this show, because he actually does a really good job, so I want to give him a big up. Did you guys see that at all? Any of it?
Yeah, I saw it.
You saw it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think about the show? What do you think about his show coming back anyway?
Well, I'm an Arsenio fan. I was at Fox when his show came on. I was at Fox when it left and was disappointed. I know the reason why he left. I'm glad he came back. And you see the networks all scrambling. They forced Jay Leno to retire so they can move your boy Jimmy Fallon up. But there's nobody like Arsenio. You can't be the black experience unless you are the black experience. I love Fallon, but he's not Arsenio. He's not Arsenio.
Yeah, in addition to that, you know, what's very disheartening is to hear several people and read comments of several people who truly feel that Arsenio's show is not nearly as good as it was before, and they're very disappointed in format, and he's still, you know, they're saying he's doing some shucking and jiving and all of that stuff. And what people have to understand is this is a different era, and this is something that we have as a people that kind of slows us down. We want to relive the time when he was on and say, oh, the show is not as good as it was before. Well, it's a different era. There's different things. But the way that Arsenio puts it out there is like this. He put a lot of people on the map
employed by Hollywood and in the music industry. He put a lot of people on. Not only our people, but the full spectrum of the rainbow in terms of his show being the outlet for people to come and speak and hear their voice. So when you fast forward it to when he first came on, I mean, it's not when he first came on, when he brought this show back, it's a different era. It's a different climate. It's a different approach. Finesse was absolutely right. The way how things went down before, we won't go into detail about it. So now he has an opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to do it, and this is how I'm going to do it.
You know,
this is the way it's going to be done.
Yep. In my recollection of his show, Arsenio was doing the exact same thing. There's days that it seemed watered down to me. Like, it wasn't always – it's not on BET. He gets to interview anybody he wants. He can get A-listers on there, and they seem to be really happy to come on there. Like, even him bringing Louis Anderson on there was cool to me because Louis Anderson was so appreciative and said, I'm glad to see that you're back. So when I watch people go on there, like, you know, not just Louis Anderson, but – other people.
Andrew Dice Clay. He almost cried again on the show. And he even said to Arsenio, like, hey, man, you know, thanks to you, you broadened my audience. You let me know that I'm better than where I've been going and what I've been doing. So, you know, you're right. It's always a pleasure when you see other people come on there and then to see the spectrum of the guests that he has, more so now than ever.
The appreciation of him. I remember when Angela Bassett came on. I have never seen her so relaxed on a talk show. I very rarely see her on a talk show to begin with. But when she was on there, it's like they're at home. And we don't have, I shouldn't say it that way, but I'm just saying as black folks, we don't really have outlets that allow us to do that. Like even if you look at, where are you going to say, Finesse?
No, I was going to agree and say that's the main thing that Arsenio was. We have a platform. And if you look at the movies that are coming out, you know, you get to see these people. He had the cast of Being Mary Jane on. That show had already been on for a season, and no other network had him on. So we need outlets like your show, like Arsenio's show, to bring out our black experience so people can appreciate that.
Yeah. He had the best man cast on there. He had the, like, he's bringing out the cast, even of reality shows. I think he had the Braxtons on there. Those guys aren't, and I know they're on Lifetime or Bravo or something, but where do you get a chance to see the whole cast of African-American films and all these other things? You know, 12 Years a Slave, Chatterwell, Edgefor, he was on there. I just played a clip from Steve McQueen. That's the only outlet, and I think he's doing a great job. So anybody hating on Arsenio, they have a problem. Like I don't. That's a black on black crime to criticize him, just because we know that there is no other program like that on TV. Get over it.
Right.
Don't watch.
Never
it.
Will be. You see, they took
and
off,
there never will
they,
be.
They took off George Lopez, and there's room for George Lopez as well. You know.
Did you see when he was on?
Yeah.
And I love George Lopez, the way he was saying, I am glad to see that you're back. Like, the way that even as comics, they're like, you are supporting me, I'm supporting you. There is no animosity. And he's like, I wish you was back. You know? And I'm saying, like, I think that part of the camaraderie as far as our culture is concerned, we miss that. So when Arsenio's there, people kind of feel that differently. So even, you know, when George Lopez was out there, he was like, he did his stand-up. Arsenio was inviting these guys to come up to do stand-up on his show. And nobody's booking them outside of clubs to do stand-up. You won't see them on Jimmy Fallon
George
and all of them.
George Lopez was on the original Arsenio Hall show more than anybody. And then when that whole thing went down and then George Lopez was able to get his show, he played it back by getting Arsenio on the show, and he wanted Arsenio to get his show. We need Arsenio, those type of shows, because we need to see us and we need to get our voice heard for the different things we have going on. That's why I loved Arsenio. It hurt me when he went off. I know the reason why he went off, but I'm glad he come back now. And, you know, you can see it. You can see the numbers don't lie. You can see record sales going up. You can see movie sales going up. And, Ice Cube said it best a couple weeks ago. He said it's because of you. If it wasn't for you, Boys in the Hood would have never made it, because we never would have got a platform. So you need
right.
people like Arsenio to do his thing. And for anybody, people of color, to say otherwise is ridiculous. And I want to give Arsenio his props. Alternative music, Limp Bizkit, all those fellas, Nirvana.
Oh, yeah.
They also pay homage to Arsenio because no one else was having them on their shows either.
Yeah, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, they were on us. Like, those guys were coming out with Arsenio. So it was cool that even what he's doing now, I can't remember that kid out of Compton. I think Dre produced him, but he
Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that was a great show, because not only did Kendrick Lamar perform, he actually interviewed him. So he was, it was a good, 20 minutes of stuff.
Right. So I think that even in Arsenio booking folks, people kept saying, I was on another show where someone in the entertainment business was in there saying, well, I don't think he's going to be able to book the A-listers and this and that, just hating on him. But what happened was they're happy to go on Arsenio's show. That's where the freedom is on Arsenio.
Yep.
He has Leah
Remy on there. He had Leah Remy. He had Whoopi. I mean, those people, the controversy of why he went off the first time, and they didn't think this second time, they were like, well, he won't last. All those actors have probably told their agents, you know what, screw you. We're going to Arsenio.
Right. Because Whoopi was on there for her mom's Maybelline project that she had on HBO. I don't remember
and she wouldn't
anybody.
Get that. Exactly. As big as she is.
I don't remember David Letterman booking her. Yep.
Nope.
David Letterman,
CBS,
Jimmy
nobody.
Fallon.
Yep. Yep.
And what is the show that comes on after Letterman? Craig Ferguson. Like, although I watch the show sometimes, it's okay. He don't have no black people on his show. I mean, I don't think he does that on purpose, but that's not his people. And I'm saying I don't force that on anybody to say that you need to have diversity. But when they start seeing those ratings change, just like what's going on with Bravo and I think it's Lifetime and all these other networks, they're putting all these black reality shows because VH1 was killing them. And then Oprah, had her moment where she brought in Dr. Phil and Rachel and Lisa Ling, and Sweetie Pies was the highest rated show ever on OWN. And then they brought in Tyler Perry.
She brought in Tyler Perry. You know what's funny? Because I was just saying to myself the other day, VH1 is more BET than BET.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. It's always been that. Since it put on Flavor of Love, I'm telling you, VH1 always caters to having. Yeah.
It's totally
that's since Flav.
And I've seen they had Boys in the Hood. They had ATL. I'm like,
yeah. That's
it's
their
like
Black History Month programming. No. Okay, so, this has always been a problem with me. When it's Black History Month, they think they can play any trifling black movie that ever been made. That's uplifting us, because that's what we want to see.
I was waiting for Soul Plane, because that's Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart is hot.
Right. I don't think they know Soul Plane was a joke. I don't think they know that. But you do see things like Baps on, too. They'll put Baps on in a minute.
Oh, Lord. Yes, they will.
They had Baps on like 5 times within the last 2 weeks.
Oh, man. All right. Well.
And I think I would rather watch Soul Plane than to watch that.
Than Baps? That is a shame. You said you'd rather have Soul Plane than that. I don't know. I think they both kind of.
I would probably do the same because Soul Plane is a little bit more on the fun side.
Right. Babs is just ridiculous.
Oh, that's true. I didn't even think about Babs. Well, okay, how about...
Well, you got to remember, she did say that the reason she did the movie was she just... And what, matter of fact, she had just got out of a tumultuous relationship with one of her men. And the first thing that came along was Babs, and she did it. And then after she saw, when it came out on the screen, she realized, like, she being Halle Berry, why did I do that?
Yeah, she said she was depressed.
And she proceeded to do that awful movie called Catwoman.
She wasn't depressed doing Catwoman. That was just a bad movie. All right. And I want to say, how about Disorderlies? I haven't seen that pop up in a while, but the Fat Boys, that's probably going to be out in a minute. Because
that was
around Bass.
I like Disorder. That was how
that
I
was around Bass. Right, but wasn't that around the same time Bass? It wasn't?
No, Disorderly way before Bass, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Disorderly was 88, 89. Bass was 93,
94. Man. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right, it was close enough. I figured. No, I was just saying for Black History that they'll lump the same genre of movies in. So
yeah, well,
we'll
I'm surprised
see
they have CB4. Oh, we could take CB4, but as long as you don't play that awful Run DMC movie.
Tougher Than Leather.
Yes.
Right. Sorry. I don't know why
that
popped in my head that quick.
That's tougher to watch.
I don't think I've ever watched that movie before. All right. All right, check us out again next week. We're going to... I probably did. Hey, unlike Friday, I remember everybody passing out, cracking up on Friday, but we'll talk about Ice Cube and his successful movie career. Now, here's the surprising, but you know, Ice Cube, what's the movie that just came out? They're almost at 100... Actually, a little over $100 million at the domestically in the box office for Ride Along. $106 million.
Well, you make sure you go see 12 Shades of Slave starring Kevin Jordan.
Oh, here we go. That must be, Coach, that must mean the show's over. I know what that means. We can't throw a flag off of that. Thank you. Enjoy us again next week. Vanessa's lost his mind. All right. We'll check you out again next week. This is Black on Black Crime with Vanessa and Coach D. We'll see you next week. Later, people.
Deuces.